Well, of course, the space we're in now, the downstairs space of the building, it is true, is a chapel, which does have a very, very particular flavour. And I've restricted the use of this chapel to the more theatrical presentations, like the performance and also the sound piece, which has really taken on the ambience of the building. And it's a piece, of course, which can be would be appreciated very differently in very different surroundings, but the flavour of this particular space has, I think, made it very powerful on this occasion. The rest of the exhibition is upstairs, which is a much more neutral space. The building is, in fact, one of the Venetian scuole, but the poorest of the scuole in Venice. As a result, it has no Tintorettos or Veroneses or anything on the walls upstairs, which makes it a wonderful place to put up some contemporary art.
Right.
I think that the work looks particularly good upstairs. The space is simple, pure, beautifully lit, square and high. And I think the artists have found it generally a very, very good space in which to show their work.
Well, from, I mean, from your position, which is a sort of independent position, I mean, how do you view the rest of the, or the actual Biennale itself? I mean, where do you see the primary significant areas to be?
Well, at this stage, I haven't actually seen the aperto, so I unfortunately can't comment on that. But in the Giardini, for me, by far the most interesting work, apart from what one knew already, I should say I knew Howard Hodgkin's work already up to a point. I do think it's been presented here in the most brilliant fashion. It looks absolutely stunning. The work looks first quality. Apart from that, the most spectacular pavilion for me has been the German pavilion, and in particular the work of Lothar Baumgarten, which I think is a very, very powerful piece. And outside there as well, the Quartetto exhibition put on by the Academia Foundation, in a way, a similar kind of venture to what I'm doing here, although on a rather more successfully international scale, obviously using very important figures. But there, the revelation for me undoubtedly also has been Luciano Fabbro, who's an artist that I've been interested in for a long time. And I think the two pieces he has there are definitely amongst the best things in Venice at the moment.
So how much longer is this exhibition taking place for? I mean, this is the beginning of June now. I mean, will you have it on for presumably not the duration of the Biennale?
Now, this exhibition will finish tomorrow. The exhibition is on for 1 week. There are two main reasons for that. One is that most people that one wants to see the work are here now. One also gets a nice trickle of people from the local quartiere who are very bemused but very interested in what's going on. But unless the exhibition was to last for the whole of the Biennale, there is no point really extending it beyond this week. And the logistical reasons are just purely the financial arrangements of putting on an exhibition like this when you hire a van and bring all the work over yourself and set it up yourself. You know, there's a limit to how much you can do and for how long you can do it. But this time certainly it's been quite enough, and it's created enough of an impact in that short time. In fact, there's a build-up, I think, of people coming today as well, because most of the rest of the Biennale is closed today. It's quite a good day to have it open. But it'll all be over tomorrow night. And within, we hope, 3 or 4 days after that, everything will be back in England.
Shayla, you're showing 3 works here in the exhibition organised by Anthony. You didn't show on the previous occasion Anthony was here. Obviously, Venice is a very unique place to actually make an exhibition. I mean, what are your feelings about the show and about the Biennale?
Well, it's very interesting to be in this beautiful building, which is very far away in context from, in feeling from the real Biennale. Mm. I think that's the most exciting thing for me, showing in this real old building with a beautiful light and that it was once a scuola with the church below, where, with other pieces in which are suitable to that.
You're showing two large watercolours and an ink drawing here, aren't
yes.
you? Did you, I mean, select the pieces before you came, or did you have a larger body of work that you actually selected once you were here?
No, Anthony selected the piece. I had a larger body of work in my studio, and he came round and selected these three particular works because he thought that they would look right in his show. I mean, it's very much his show, and he selected all the work in it, I think, exactly, precisely. And I came with him in the van carrying the work, and he had the whole show planned, even the amount of boards and to make the partitions and so on. And when we got here, he knew exactly where he was going to place each artist. And then by eye, we changed it a bit like that. And so he knew what he wanted.
Have you been able to visit the Biennale exhibitions?
Yes, I've been. The first day, when we'd hung the show, I went to the Aperto, which was still, of course, being hung on the first day. And then yesterday to the other end, into the beautiful green gardens with a beautiful green English pavilion. And I went to nearly every pavilion. Two very different shows, actually. I feel ours is, in a sense... Oh, and of course there's the other show, the Quartetto. Which is also in a scuola, quite a different one, and much more rich, beautiful one than this one. And that was very exciting to see that work too, especially Fabro's piece, which I enjoy very much.
I just wondered whether, Venice is a very exotic Renaissance, Baroque, Rococo city. I mean, everywhere you go there are wonderful paintings and sculpture and so on. And in fact... downstairs in the church where you're showing, there's yes. a sort of Renaissance altarpiece. I mean, not yes. as lavish as perhaps some, but nevertheless, it's quite exotic. I mean, is it, therefore, do you think, a difficult place to actually show contemporary art? I mean, how do you see the sort of effect of the richness that one is affected by everywhere, having on the work that's shown here?
I think it's a very good test for it. I the feeling that it's a city of art and that people come here to look at art, and also in the past, you know, it's got such a wonderful history. I think it's, I find it myself very exciting to be part of that. More than any, not that I've shown abroad very much, but more than any other, there's a special thing about it here. And I think it's a great test, actually, for recent work. You know, to be beside, well, one doesn't compare oneself to Titian and Tintoretto, but, you know, to feel that one is somehow in that tradition is exciting. Mm.
So is that what one goes away with, having actually shown work in that sort of setting?
yes, perhaps, but lots of other things. I found the other shows, I mean, I know all the artists in our show and know the work very well anyway from England, but I mean it's and although I've been to quite a lot of other big shows, I mean it's very interesting to see all those Italian artists in that mixed show at the Giardini, and to see, you know, how different it is to what goes on in England, and it's interesting to see how the English artists match up in the Aperto, and you know, all that.
I mean, what about all the sort of revivalist work in that central pavilion in Giardini, with the Renaissance and kind of classical motifs and emblems being resurrected? I mean, what's your feeling about all that? Because there's an excess of it, isn't there, really?
Yes. Do you really want me to say?
Oh, please do.
Well, I found that show, it's very interesting, that because, I mean, it was very carefully put together show good, interesting pieces by older, well thought of artists, and some of them one had never seen before. And then it led on to all this other stuff. But what I think I found most interesting or most disappointed me most about the newer work was that, in a sense, it didn't refer to the originals. It referred to the artists who'd already done it, who'd already made pastiches. And I find a lot of that new work exceedingly boring, you know, large and very repetitive. Many of the artists, I mean, they all seem to be doing very similar things.
Was there anything, on the other hand, that really did surprise you or impress you, either in the Giardini or Alberto part of the exhibition?
Well, I think people that I'd seen before, actually. I mean, I like the Fabro piece in there, and it's Paolini, isn't it, the one who did with all the little torn papers. I mean, his piece.
That's right. It's a sort of a white room with Greek statues and very classical piece.
That's right. Very, very beautiful piece. I mean, I thought that was magnificent. I've actually seen his work before, of course, and I always like it. In the Aperto, I have to go back there. I mean, I found that a bit of a muddle, the Aperto, actually. It was quite interesting to see the graffiti artists actually, you know, A1 was actually up there spraying away. Mm. I mean, that was added colour to the show. But I didn't see any other pieces in that show that I was particularly interested in. But I must say, I did find that show rather disappointing. Mm-hmm. But the Giardini show's more interesting because it was much more unknown art. I mean, it's always interesting to see work from the Egyptian Pavilion. I mean, that was out of this world. But it was peculiar to see it amongst all the other things. And it was interesting to see what was the Polish pavilion and the Yugoslav and the ones from the Finland and Iceland and all those people.
Okay, well, I think the 12 o'clock bell is about to chime in the church.
In Venice you don't actually need a watch because there's so many bells everywhere, do you? You can go. And as you were saying, you didn't have a clock, you just woke up.
Back in the Aperto section, in fact the final interview or conversation here in Venice is with Connie Beckley, who is showing a series of collages, I think one would be the most accurate way of describing them, here in the space. Connie, I know of your work, of course, through the piece you made for Life to Air, to Faust, a footnote, and these are, in fact, quite recent, aren't they? 1983. I mean, were you making sort of visual pieces all along in relation to the sort of sound works that you've made?
Yeah, I've been making, say, what I call drawings since about 77, 78. Very often they were dependent on a performance or on an installation, and it's really been the last 2.5 years that I've just simply stopped having to justify these works in regard to my performances. However, they did come from my installations in the sense that I did a piece in 78 in which I used silk chiffon with the idea that it was a way of representing the presence of a performer without the performer being there. And I started working with the idea of silk, the fact that it moved, the fact there was something sensuous about it. And so I guess you could say that these things do spring from a characteristic of my work. However, there's absolutely no documentary quality to these works. I mean, I don't try to relate them to my installations or performances at all.
Mm. Well, the connection with silk is certainly clear because, in fact, they're on suspended panels of fabric, aren't they? But the actual formal elements, I mean, where do they come from? Because they're sort of more or less abstracted, except that one over there.
Well, it's seems to... It's very difficult for me to talk about these things because they aren't really representational, but I do work a lot with connections. The idea of connecting something to something else. And, I mean, you can just, you know, see how something springs out of one area of the canvas and is making, pointing at another area, and almost the way one circles things to make it stand out.
Are they, in fact, formally related to performances? I mean, are they a sort of notation?
No, not at all, not at all. Right. And, I mean, the other thing that... as far as the way I hang them, I mean, they're very, very two-dimensional. I have resisted going into canvas and with a sort of three-dimensional support system because I liked the idea of making something that was sort of strong to look at, but in fact very, very fragile, which is also characteristic of my performances. I mean, they're very fragile. They can be broken very easily, but if they're not broken, they're very strong. So that's, I mean, as far as the sensibility, of course, you can see a similar sensibility in the work.
If we could move on now to the actual Biennale itself and the Aperto section. I mean, clearly before you came, like all of us, one had no sort of idea as to how it would look. I mean, how do you feel now about being part of this section?
Well, I'm actually very proud to be in this section. I feel there's a lot of uneven entries in this. The space is not... I mean, it would be lovely to have this space without the white walls because it's such a... I'm very sight-oriented, but due to the fact that the salt would just destroy the paintings, it's necessary to hang it on these walls. But I don't know. I think that there's a feeling of life to this section, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
What about the other parts of the Biennale in the gardens?
Well, I just came back from there, and it's the international building is still sort of a carnival atmosphere. You know, people just sort of walking around, not really stopping at all. I mean, there's some very interesting video things actually down there. The one with the two monitors and the machine gun. I think it was that Bali Expo. I thought that was very strong. Very strong use of video without being too, you know, using the novelty of it so much. I don't know. The whole idea of pavilions is like a world's fair, and I think that's the thing that I have a problem with. I like the idea of mixing things up because I didn't go into the Spain building, you know. So perhaps if I'd gone, if someone from Spain would have been in, you know, the international, it would have been something I would have seen. But I don't like the way it's divided up.
Is this your first trip to Venice, in fact?
No, I was here in 76 for the Venice Biennale when I performed in Einstein on the Beach with Bob Wilson and Phil Glass. And then again, I did a performance in 1980 with the Bordeaux exhibition. Seems I never come here under the guise of the Americans. In fact, someone asked me if I've ever shown outside of London. So this is my third Biennale, actually.
Waldemar, we're on our way back. In fact, we're descending. So I think you should add maybe your final comments on the Biennale. What do you think?
Well, I'm glad to be going home, really. The best moments of all for the Biennale were meeting this gentleman called Gordon Byrne, who turns out to be a Sunday Times journalist who's writing a novel about the art world. Now, he might be better known to people back home as the man who's just written Somebody's Husband, Somebody's Son, a book on the Yorkshire Ripper. I'm sure he'll have a lot of fun, because most of the memories that I have from this of seeing lots and lots of art world people making absolute fools of themselves. What an extraordinary event it was. I felt as if I was in a tank of piranhas most of the time. But there were one or two nice art moments, and I must say that the English came out very well. So all in all, a Biennale to be remembered rather than enjoyed, I think.
Right. I mean, now that we're sort of getting back and things are perhaps slipping into some sort of perspective, I mean, what do you think now that you didn't think before you came about works and about the actual event itself?
Well, I wasn't sure what I felt about the graffiti artists. Now I know, I'm appalled by them. I wasn't sure what I felt about Howard Hodgkin. Now I know, he's a more substantial artist than I thought. And I wasn't sure what I felt about the current state of art. Now I know, I'm appalled by most of it. But I'm really pleased with the English contribution. And apart from anything else, you know, there are only three or four moments in the whole escapade where people seem to stop, lift up their heads from all this carousing, all this sensationalism, all this desperate enjoying themselves, to say something serious, and I'm talking about the artists. And almost all those moments came from British artists. Glenys Johnson, Terry Atkinson, they're the only people who said, listen, we might be having lots of frantic fun here, but in fact the world's in a mess. And the only places where you actually were told to sort of stop and listen and made to think were those few moments there, and they're the most precious moments for me.
I mean, what about the more extreme, absurd kind of polarities of the whole show? I mean, what about the Athos Ongaro piece, I mean, which seems to typify a lot of work that frankly, you know, I mean, I can't believe it was presented seriously in an exhibition of contemporary art.
I had an extraordinary day yesterday. I went to see this Athos Ongaro piece, and I burst out laughing, and I laughed for 10 minutes solid. I couldn't help it. It was so clearly absurd. So absurd. It was a fountain, and on the back was a water god holding an urn out of which water was pouring into this fountain. And at the front was this sort of Cupid portrait, which I presume was a self-portrait of the artist, holding his finger up in that gesture popularised by John the Baptist. And it was so silly. When you actually look at it and you think, what on earth are we doing making art that wouldn't look out of place in a sort of kitsch playboy garden? My God, it was funny. And then off you went, having seen that. And I went to see a Tintoretto piece, and it was absolutely magnificent. I went to see the San Rocco sculptures. And that was the summit of human achievement, from the sublime to the banal. What more could you ask of an exhibition? And to point out the vast differences between artists of the past and artists of today. That was a really very funny piece, that Athos piece.
So, I mean, in spite of everything, though, I mean, you think the whole exercise, extravagant and absurd though elements of it were, was in fact worthwhile. I mean, it certainly seems to have been worthwhile in relation to the British artists.
Yes, it's worthwhile just because it, I mean, it doesn't actually have anything to do with pinpointing what's important in art. I think that's quite clear. That's been clear over the years. It certainly pinpoints how the art world behaves and how it likes to be seen. What it does do is it sort of, I think it's almost like a wedding or something. It brings the family together, in this case the art world, and everybody sort of gets together and sees each other for the first time in 2 years, and off they go in their separate ways. And that's very important, because movements get made or broken here. It's interesting to see the way that people who were in the exhibition 2 years ago in the sort of young Aperto section are now the people who are dominating the central pavilion. So there's a kind of passing the baton effect goes on at Venice Biennales, and we're seeing it again this time. Somehow or other I enjoyed this one more than most. I'm not sure why. Perhaps it was really because the good pieces that were in there were largely by British artists talking sensible things and warning us about the sort of the frivolity and the stupidity on view elsewhere. It was almost as if everything else in the show, all the rubbish, all the really silly things. I mean, there was a bad painting called Vivisection, I remember, which I suspect is just my bad pronunciation of W's. With a man with sort of scars all over and stitches, and everybody was sort of producing bad art left, right and centre, but it's almost as if this was the perfect frame against which an artist like Glynis Johnson was saying, look, the world's going crazy, for Christ's sake, stop and look at each other, let's see what we're doing. It's almost as if that was the perfect frame for her, made her work look better. So, in that respect, we needed all that rubbish at the Biennale just to make the good artists stand out, whether it be Howard Hodgkin, whether it be Terry Atkinson, Paul Richards or Glynis Johnson. They all stood out because everybody, so many of the other people around them, were making such aesthetic fools of themselves. There was Athos, my dear Athos, who I hope is going to have a show in London soon, had a relief in the style of Ghiberti, of a gorilla riding a horse with a sort of Cupid character in front of it. And the worst thing is I don't think he was trying to be funny. That's the worst thing. I mean, I hope I'm proved wrong, but this is really the most amusing Biennale I've been to. And I mean, if a laugh is what you're after, then I've certainly had that.
I'm going to finally talk to Julian Andrews, who is the arts director of the British Council. Julian, I mean, how do you think the Biennale has gone, particularly for the British section?
Let me say, first of all, what I think of the Biennale as a whole. For a number of years now, the foreign commissioners have had an increasing feeling that it has been they and their artists who have been putting the real input into the Biennale and not the Biennale organisers. And we have been extremely sad, in a way, to see the overall level of the exhibitions in the Central Pavilion going down. We feel there has been a radical change and that, in fact, the organisers have left things to us. And therefore, we have a lot of countries making a huge effort, putting a lot of money in to do good individual exhibitions, but something has slipped in the centre. I have to tell you that this morning, the opening day, there was an informal meeting of foreign commissioners held actually at the British Pavilion, and we discussed the problems, and we have agreed to put out a statement to the Biennale organisers and to the press, complaining about the problems, about the increasing seriousness of the problems, the bad administration, the lack of information, the failures of communication, and also the decline in the overall value of this event as an international art event. Because the fact is, we all believe in it. We believe it's extremely important. We believe it could come back and give to the contemporary art world that very exciting mood which we know existed in the 50s and the early 60s. But it just seems to have gone, and something has to be done.
Yeah. Well, certainly that was my feeling. I mean, arriving 3 days prior to today, and nothing seemed to be finished. The place seemed to be in a sort of shambles. I mean, I must say, the British Pavilion was finished and was exquisite, but generally, one couldn't really see the show as a whole, because things weren't on the wall, labels weren't there, works were still in packing cases. I mean, even during the press sort of 3 day opening, which I think is pretty outrageous, really, if one is inviting a sort of international press contingent. And also, I mean, they closed Saturday and they closed this afternoon. I mean, people have come from all over the world and they need sort of 2 or 3 days to hoover it. I mean, it seems ludicrous to me. But is this part of the problem?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The fact is that a number of the national pavilions presented shows to a very high standard. I'm glad you also liked ours. But you can rest assured that we had to put a tremendous amount of effort to get it the way it is. We had to pay a great deal, and this actually includes even paying custodians. The Biennale, who in their contract tell us that custodians will be provided, did not provide them. And so, year by year, we've had to put a bigger input in ourselves, as have the Germans, the French, and all our colleagues. Now, the reason that it was closed yesterday, Saturday, it's traditional. There are 3 press view days, and the place is closed on the Saturday in order to clean up before the public opening. But when we came in this morning, we found that absolutely nothing had been cleaned. And so the French commissioner, a very distinguished colleague from the French Foreign Ministry, borrowed the British broom in order to sweep his pavilion. Perhaps if this gives us some European solidarity, it's a good thing. But it's rather sad that it has to come out of such chaos.
Right. So in fact, what you've done is to issue a statement saying, right, this is as far as you're prepared to go. I mean, unless things are actually corrected and things are really taken in hand.
the next time may not happen, or...
We are putting out this statement. At the moment, it's in draft. It's been signed already by 15 of the foreign commissioners, including commissioners from East Europe, from the communist countries, as well as from the West. And we intend to present this to the Biennale Council and issue it to the press. And we shall say precisely that, that many, many problems have been aired at preparatory meetings for a long time. We have asked for solutions. The solutions have not been forthcoming. We have to have signs of progress, or else we shall have to reconsider our position as national pavilions in future biennales.
Right. Now, just returning then to Howard Hodgkin's show, I mean, what do you think the specific response to it has been, both in Italy and internationally?
I have found the response in Italy extremely interesting. We knew that the Italians did not know Hodgkin as a painter, and they have been incredibly positive, very, very interested indeed. I met people, I overheard people on the vaporettos, on the boat stops and so on, all discussing Hodgkin. As a painter, he has these references, these autobiographical little asides in his work, which people with the sensitivity of the Italians pick up, and they also deeply appreciate, of course, his use of colour. And I think that there's going to be a lot more interest in Hodgkin in Italy, and also, I'm glad to say, in France. Otherwise, I believe that the risk we took to show a very few works against a rather daring background of colour, I think it's come off. You can argue it two ways. Many people would have said that perhaps the colour was a little over the top.
It is the green on the walls, in fact, you're talking about.
That's right, which Hodgkin himself chose because it's the same green as he has in his own sitting room. One or two people said that it was like wandering around someone's sitting room going into the pavilion, and if they felt that comfortable, we're pleased.
Well, we've talked about the sort of British Pavilion and Howard Hodgkin's work. I mean, have you been involved in the Aperto section?
Now, the Aperto is a relatively new creation. This is only the third Biennale that has happened. And it came as quite a surprise to many people in 1980 when it started. And we feel it's extremely good. By its very nature, the main Biennale is a kind of classical event. And it was interesting that a lot of countries chose to show older artists this year. Therefore, it's important that there should be a section concentrating on young artists. And we believe that the Aperto has given an extremely good opportunity for people to see what is going on in the really contemporary scene in many countries. From the British Council point of view, in the past, we have only backed the main British entry. We have only had the money, the resources to do that. But this time, we were so convinced by the previous successes of the Aperto that we were able to find some funds to put in and give a bit of support to the British artists who went to it. And I'm very glad we did. I think it's an excellent event. I hope it will continue.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's the 1984 Venice Biennale. We're sort of now flying back, and it'll all recede in time and place and so on. But, I mean, what happens now with regard to presumably the 1986 Venice Biennale from Britain's point of view? I mean, how do you go about planning for it and selecting for it?
Well, the National Pavilion isn't looked at just as a purely national event, because what one is looking at, really, is what is happening on the international scene. So we need to be aware of new trends, tendencies, fashions, if you like, within the art world. We need to monitor these. We need to consider quite serious things, such as is it really the moment to continue emphasizing painting, for example? I mean, we've shown a painter this year, but it's been a very long time since any painting was seen in the pavilion. Now, will painting keep up the momentum, the strength that it seems to have at the moment? We shall also need to just see which sort of new stars are emerging. It's a very difficult thing to do, to pick an artist for the Biennale. On occasions, we've picked someone quite young who seems to be getting launched, who seems to be hitting that sensitive nerve within the art scene at a particular time, and we try and show him right at the start. In the case of this year, we've picked quite the opposite. We've picked an artist in mid-career who we feel has not been sufficiently understood. Yeah. And what we will do is the Fine Arts Advisory Committee, who are the people that I turn to from the British Council to give opinions, to give advice on our policies, we will call meetings and we will discuss what's going on, and a number of names will be thrown out and various suggestions will be put forward. And through a series of meetings, we shall have to refine these and hone them down until we come perhaps to a very difficult decision between X or Y.
And when will you have to make the final decision, given that this is 1984?
Well, ideally, one should be already planning the exhibition a year in advance. So, you know, by the spring of 1985, we should already be thinking quite seriously about who's going to be there in 1986.
Well, that was the final interview en route home from the Venice Biennale with Julian Andrews, Fine Art Director of the British Council. But the tape is actually going to end by returning to St Mark's Square, where I recorded the bells this morning at 12 o'clock.